From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis, your host for this important discussion on where the world stands regarding its goal of ending tuberculosis and the importance of following through on commitments made to end the disease. Tuberculosis, or TB, is reclaiming the title of the world's most deadly infection, even as the COVID-19 pandemic continues to kill an estimated 1,450 people daily. In the past 2 years, tuberculosis deaths have been on the rise, yet funding continues to be lacking. In Africa, one-third of the people on the continent die from TB, even though they have less than one-fifth of the world's population. TB is a bacterial infection, usually in the lungs, that can cause coughing, chest pain, and fever, and can be characterized by coughing up blood or mucus. It is curable and is often treated with a regimen of drugs that usually includes antibacterial medicines. It can also be prevented with protocols such as screening, vaccination, and making sure people who are infected finish their course of treatment. 4 years ago, there was hope that TB might be receiving the attention it deserves. The United Nations held a high-level meeting in September 2018, where more than half of the world's nations convened to rally support to tackle TB. Many pledges were made. However, fulfillment of these pledges were off to a slow start, and then COVID-19 took center stage, devastating populations around the globe. As a result, the world has fallen short of reaching these goals. For example, the nonprofit organization TB Alliance reports that nations pledged to invest $2 billion annually by 2022 for TB research and $13 billion annually for TB diagnostics, treatment, and care. Other commitments included treating more people and preventing more active TB cases. UN meetings were held this month in New York City as a prelude to the next high-level meeting on TB, which will take place this September when the UN General Assembly meets to focus on funding for research and treatment of TB. Joining me to discuss the next vital steps needed to get everyone back on track now is Dr. Mel Spiegelman, CEO of TB Alliance. Welcome, Dr. Spiegelman. Thank you for joining me on Press Conference USA.
Well, thank you very much for highlighting this unbelievable global problem. Really, thank you for that.
Let's just talk about tuberculosis as a disease that is still killing people. Why is this still a killer disease?
Well, I think primarily this is a killer disease because it right now is primarily a disease of the poor, to be very frank. And as such, it simply does not get the attention of diseases that afflict primarily or at least uniformly both rich, well-to-do, and poor people around the world. And the reality is that TB is primarily found in low and middle-income countries. And even in those countries, it's primarily found in the lower socioeconomic strata. And poor people tend not to have as much of a political voice within the world, within their countries, and tend, again, frankly, not to get the attention that they so rightly deserve. So TB has been allowed to fester, and even during the COVID pandemic, to even get worse because of this type of neglect.
And also, I understand one of the commitments made in Africa was to find and treat 40 million people with TB between 2018 and 2022, including 3.5 million children and 1.5 million people with drug-resistant TB. What has happened to this commitment?
The commitment just has not been met. So that's the bottom line. Now, obviously, the COVID pandemic played a role in that. But I fear that even without the COVID pandemic, the commitments would likely not have been met. And that's why what you mentioned earlier in your introduction is so important, that this September, this fall, when we have the next high-level meeting at the UN, we really have to get not only major commitments from countries around the world, but we have to have them somehow be made into binding commitments that are really adhered to.
Secondly, there was a commitment that was to provide preventative treatment for 30 million people at risk for TB infections. Where is this goal at this point?
Well, that goal is very, very far from being met. And it's, in a sense, ironic, is that in spite of the very, very limited amount of resources that have been dedicated to TB, there has been tremendous progress made. And if we look at the issue of preventative treatment has gone from requiring 6 to 9 months of treatment down to now we can do effective preventative treatment in 1 month. But still, the resources there to even put into place that 1 month of treatment around the world have still not materialized. We've seen similar progress in the treatment of, for example, drug-resistant TB and even the most drug-resistant TB, where over the past few years, we've been able to bring down the treatment duration of treating this deadly disease of drug-resistant TB from 18 months or even longer down to 6 months, which is still way too long, but is a marked improvement. And we're now able to cure, with this new six-month regimen, 90% of patients who have drug-resistant TB. But yet, we're having difficulties getting the resources to really have this widely adopted around the world. So it really ultimately does come down to resources that are deployed at all stages and for all aspects of the disease. So this includes starting with research and development and then getting into the healthcare systems that are just not equipped to deal with the disease, especially in the poorer countries around the world. And this includes all modalities. We right now do not have an effective vaccine. The vaccine that's used is over 100 years old and has a little bit of an effect in kids. But there is no effective vaccine, for example, in adults. We do not yet have a diagnostic that can be used in what we call point of care. And by point of care, COVID is a great example. Over the course of a year, we went from a disease that didn't exist to a disease that someone could diagnose in their home in 15 minutes with a test that they would just give themselves. We don't have anything close to that with TB. And then in the field of therapeutics, we've made tremendous advances, but still 6 months of treatment is simply way too long with a cocktail of 3 to 4 drugs. That's very difficult for people to adhere to. So we have made huge progress. We could, there's absolutely no question in my mind, if anywhere near the resources that were devoted to COVID, were also devoted to a disease like TB or to TB specifically, I think we could eradicate the disease, TB. But we're not even remotely close to having that sort of a commitment to TB.
And also, when you're looking at the stakeholders in this, who are some of the biggest stakeholders and what should they be doing?
Well, you know, the whole world is a stakeholder, first of all. You know, as we say in TB, TB anywhere is TB everywhere. And again, COVID was a prime example of that. You know, new variants came up all over the world, and before you knew it, they spread to every country around the world. This is what happens with airborne diseases that are spread by simply people breathing in the air that other people exhale who may have the disease, and in an era of tremendous travel. So stakeholders are the whole world. What is the situation, however, is that we have to expect that every country should do what it can according to its means. And clearly, that means, just like what we have today, the biggest investments in TB are being made by the most well-to-do countries, such as the United States, the United Kingdom, Germany, etc. So yes, relatively speaking, it is the richer countries in the world who are making the commitments and providing what resources are available. But we have to do much better than that. Of note, if we look even at some of the middle-income countries like China, India, Indonesia, Russia, these are countries who have extremely high burdens of TB. And clearly, I believe that also these countries could be doing much, much more as they've become more affluent and have more resources at their disposal. And even when we look at poor countries around the world, there is a role that they can certainly play also. For example, the research that gets done in testing, whether it's vaccines or drugs or diagnostics, gets done in the countries where TB is most prevalent. And those countries are the relatively poorer countries in the world. And much could also be done in those countries to make it much easier and less expensive, more efficient to do that research. Then also, when new advances are found, to ensure that those advances are employed quickly and effectively and fairly throughout the whole population. So this is a global problem. All of the involved players are basically every country around the world. And we need to look to contributions and solutions from all countries around the world. And I think if we can muster that sort of resolve, as I said earlier, we can get to a point where TB is a disease of the past and a relic of history.
Yes, that would really be something to look forward to. But it's time now for a quick break. And when we return, a look at how Kyiv, Ukraine, set the stage for a new treatment regimen for highly drug-resistant TB. You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Dr. Mel Spiegelman, CEO of TB Alliance, and I'm Kim Lewis, your host. This is a reminder that our Press Conference USA podcast is available for free download on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. Now back to our program with guest Dr. Mel Spiegelman, CEO of TB Alliance. Dr. Spiegelman, in Ukraine, research began on a new treatment for drug-resistant TB before Russian troops invaded the country. Can you tell us more about this research and treatment and how it continued as Russia invaded Ukraine?
Going back, quite a few years to around 2015 to 2017, we at the TB Alliance tried a totally novel approach of combining three new drugs that had been only relatively recently brought into the potential armamentarium against TB, and really based on a fair amount of preclinical or animal data, started a research program that looked at the most extensive forms of TB and used these three new drugs in combination, and based on the preclinical data said we would see whether we could cure patients who formerly required 18 months of treatment or longer. And at that time, even then, with that long treatment with up to 5 or 8 drugs, including injection daily, well, it was painful and caused a lot of side effects and produced only about a 30% cure rate. We tried to see whether we could get much better results with a new 3-drug, once a day, just pills, for 6 months. And lo and behold, it worked. And we saw about a 90% cure rate with 6 months of treatment. And then we secured the approval of the U.S. FDA for this combination in one totally new drug that had never been approved for any other disease in the world, a drug called pertominid. And we secured that approval in 2019. And then from the European Medicines Association and other governments around the world, starting in 2020. One of the countries that was the first to really take this up was Ukraine. And they started to do that before the invasion in what's called operational research. And as some of you may know, many of the countries that are in that part of the world, formerly part of the USSR, suffered tremendously from drug-resistant TB. That is one of the hotbeds of drug-resistant TB. So Ukraine was really at the forefront before the invasion of implementing this treatment and of testing it in its population of drug-resistant TB patients. And then the invasion came, and I believe I would categorize it as almost a godsend in the sense that with this much simplified regimen and with hospitals being bombed, TB centers having to be closed, patients no longer being able to stay if they were alive near their treating physicians, they could actually send the patients away with a course of treatment of these pills for the patients to take on their own and still be cured. This was simply an unbelievable reversal from what the treatment of drug-resistant TB was like before this new innovation of this three-drug regimen, by the way, called BPAL, for the three drugs that are in the regimen. So Ukraine really proved to be a true leading country in showing the benefits that could be derived. Obviously, you know, if benefits like this can be derived in the midst of a war zone, in the midst of, you know, a horrible attack, one can imagine what you could achieve under what I'll call normal conditions. So Ukraine has played a tremendous role in both in terms of providing care for its own people, but also being a shining light, really, for the rest of the world.
Yes, it is quite impressive that Ukraine was able to confirm the effectiveness of this new treatment regimen while the country was being invaded. So how will this new regimen be presented to the world?
Well, the new regimen is being presented to the world now through a huge effort, which again is lacking from the point of view of adequate resources. Presenting new treatment around the world is difficult. Every country needs to adopt the regimen. Every country needs to be educated as to the ins and outs of how to use new treatment. The healthcare systems still have to be strengthened. And, you know, we're talking about 100 countries around the world that have at least some patients that would benefit. And it's obviously extremely difficult to develop, discover, document that new treatments work. But the job doesn't stop there. It is equally difficult to ensure that these drugs get to every single patient who needs them. And that is the struggle that we're now in, is ensuring that this treatment gets to every patient. The WHO is heavily involved, as so many countries take their cues from the WHO guidance. And the WHO guidance just came out, I guess, last year, that basically instructed on the benefits of this new treatment. And that's great. The Global Fund helps in terms of providing some resources to ensure that the drug would be available, but it's still a drop in the bucket of what really is needed to effectively roll out regimens, new treatments. So I think it's moving ahead much more quickly than any prior advances in the field of treatment of TB, but it's still way too slow, and we simply need more resources to be able to effectively get into all of these countries around the world and have them, what we call, scale up the treatment at a rapid rate.
Just looking at TB cases here in the United States, it appears more cases are being reported and returning to levels seen before the COVID-19 pandemic. And this is according to a new report from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So what is driving new cases of TB in the United States?
also in the United States, we had the same phenomenon that healthcare did suffer a blow during the COVID pandemic in terms of people being diagnosed. It wasn't just TB. We saw the same effect with people getting diagnosed with cancer and with other diseases where, you know, as I'm sure so many of the listeners, especially in the United States, are aware, it was much more difficult to access medical care during the height of the COVID pandemic, with all the problems attendant on people getting out of their houses, traveling, offices being open, and all of that. And especially for a disease like TB, you can't make the diagnosis remotely over a telephone, really, because of, again, the difficulty. There's no home test to take. One has to get into a specialized laboratory, cough up sputum, have that sputum be tested in what is usually a very expensive and difficult manner. So all of this contributed. And also, I don't have documentation for this, but I think the spread of TB was probably enhanced by people being together more at home in sometimes very crowded places, because TB in the United States is no different than TB in other countries. It is also predominantly a disease in the United States of the poor. And therefore, I think we have ready understanding of why TB became a bigger problem even in the United States over the last few years with the attendant COVID pandemic. So yes, clearly we had that setback, but even in this situation, and we can provide you or readers articles that show this, but the BPAL, this new regimen, even in a country like the United States that has a very low burden of drug-resistant TB, it has been also tremendous benefit to patients here in the United States. It's been used in quite a number of patients right here in the United States. I happen to be talking to someone from actually the health department in New York City, where I live, and he was telling me about the number of cases in New York City that he's treated already that have been treated with this regimen for drug-resistant TB. And I was frankly surprised. I didn't even think that it was going to be used that often or needed that often right here in the U.S., but it has been. And it's been obviously a benefit in countries like Ukraine, but it's been a benefit right here at home, at my home, at least in the United States also.
Your report says globally, only 1 in 3 people with multi-drug-resistant TB accessed treatment in 2021. So why aren't people getting treatment for TB, or is it just really hard to access globally?
There's multiple reasons. Number one, it's been difficult to diagnose. So it starts right away with a difficulty in diagnosis. It also starts right away with the access to care. Even for drug-sensitive TB, a third of the cases around the world are never documented or notified. And that's for a disease that drug-sensitive is much more easily diagnosed, but we still have a third of the cases that are not notified. And that is, again, due to the lack of the healthcare system's ability to really, and especially in poor countries, to reach out and to diagnose and to provide the care needed for patients with TB. So it starts with the healthcare systems. It's then difficult to diagnose. Then it's difficult to treat, which is a disincentive to even making the or it used to be a big disincentive to making the diagnosis because we had such horrible treatment. So that if you knew, even if you made the diagnosis, the patient only had a 30% chance or so of ever being cured. And then with treatment that may have arguably been as bad as the disease, one can think of how there's not a great push to diagnose when you don't have good treatment. And obviously, the ultimate game also has to include having a good preventative treatment and a vaccine for which we clearly do not yet have a really good vaccine. So it's almost on every level, the system, so to speak, and the situation with TB conspires against having efficient treatment and really getting people to treatment, getting better treatment, getting preventatives. And it's all about the lack of resources at the end of the day, because there is no question in my mind, the science is there. We've shown it. If you unleash the powers of science that exists today on the problem of TB, we can eradicate TB. But we saw in COVID what it takes to unleash the powers of science, whether it's for vaccines, for treatments, or for diagnostics. And we're not even remotely close to doing that in TB.
And in looking at that aspect of it, how do you see getting the world to focus on funding research and development to fight TB?
Well, a huge number of the TB community are now very actively involved in going around the world with talking to governments. Like I think you alluded to at the beginning, we had a series of meetings this week in New York as a run-up to the high-level meeting in the fall. And there's so many people now who are dedicating their time and effort, including many of us at the TB Alliance, to raising the awareness, to highlighting the problem, to presenting the potential for solving this problem with adequate resources. And so we're, I think, doing a huge amount of work collectively within the TB community at raising the awareness and hopefully getting so many of the countries on board with the need to really dedicate themselves, dedicate the resources. And I hope we have a successful outcome at the high-level meeting in the fall.
Finally, when you're talking about raising the awareness, what indicates there's a TB angle in many of the world's top stories?
Well, the TB angle is TB as a disease has again, after a brief interlude where COVID, unfortunately, became the top infectious disease killer in the world, TB has now again taken over that very dubious distinction of killing more people as a single infectious disease than any other disease in the world, including COVID, including HIV. And this is just so remarkable because we have the science that could be dedicated to TB, and we have the proof of that, and get the results that we need to have progress. But it's at a snail's pace. And then when it gets cut off because of a higher priority problem, it regresses. So we have the data, we have the evidence. This disease provides countries a phenomenal return on what I would look at also as their investment. This is not charity. Investing in solving the TB problem is actually, and we've shown this, produces huge economic benefits in addition to the humanitarian benefits. So we shouldn't look at this as how much is donated to TB or how much is allocated to TB. We should look at this as how much is invested in TB, knowing that the world and all the countries, et cetera, around the world will get a tremendous return on their investment in terms of the benefits to their own countries even. So I think there is just tremendous rationale for why countries and stakeholders should get involved, but we just need to make that point and to drive that home.
Yes, and we are out of time and we'll end the show on that note. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Mel Spiegelman, CEO of TB Alliance, for his time. And thank you, Dr. Spiegelman, for sharing your insight on the latest research and treatment programs on TB, an often underreported disease, but still a deadly disease.
Thank you very much for helping to highlight this issue.
I'm Kim Lewis, and be sure to tune in next week with Carol Castiel for another Press Conference USA.